Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fife from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well. Welcome to another AFL Fantasy Strategy Roundtable. There is a ton of stuff we've got to talk about this week. For many, round seven, the week that never ended, from footy starting on Wednesday night right through to Wednesday. It was the round that if anything went wrong, it just felt like going through barbed wire, painful and one point at a time. While when things were going your way, you're like, no, just keep this round rolling on. Regardless of, we're about to get back into Thursday night footy and another important week for us in the AFL fantasy community to attack. I want to talk rapid fire with a bunch of the members of the panel. There's a ton of players I want to get their thoughts on. We have to talk about how you stay ahead of the pack. What do you do if your year is going absolutely belly up at the moment, and some really important trading options to consider. That is what you got lined up for you on this week's AFL Fantasy Strategy Roundtable from us here at the Coaches Panel. Joining me on this episode, hey, if you're watching it on YouTube, you already know who the guests are. You're ahead of the pack, ladies and gentlemen. Mini Monk, to my left, mate, pleasure to see you. Is a tough week for a lot of people in the community last week. Some got through it unscathed, some limped to the finish line, but the good thing of these Thursday night games is we can have some optimism really fast around our AFL fantasy sides, can't we?
Yeah, we can. You should have given me a trigger warning at the start. You're bringing up the bad memories already. At least Max Gorn can't ruin my Thursday evening, or Wednesday evening for that matter, this week.
Yeah, he's done that a lot for non-owners as well. And right throughout, well, the past couple of years, he's been part of the Coaches Panel. He appears about as often as an Adelaide Crows victory, to be fair, since 2020. It's Jordox, mate. Your boy's got the victory. You're up and about.
Yeah, where's the trigger warning for that one? Yes, yeah, good to be here, MJ. Mini, great to see you, mate. Last weekend, it kind of made me think of the classic movie, The Matrix, with the bullets. Every game that came, even if you avoided bullets in the first game, the second game, by the end of the long, long round, you were hit by something. And it was, I don't like it when we use the word carnage. I think it's a bit over the top. But last weekend was a big one for chaos.
It was right on the ledge for some of us. For others, it was the Grand Canyon of chaos. And others, it was just, you know, the scenic tour above the Grand Canyon of chaos going, oh, I remember what some of those weeks are. And so maybe that's where we should start, is we all entered into round one, which is crazy enough, just 2 months ago now. It feels closer than that. It also feels longer away than that. We all entered into the season with a level of optimism and confidence that the work we'd done in the preseason, what we'd seen through opening round, would give us an element of advantage to be able to build a strong starting squad. But as the year goes on, the variables start to come. You get rookie roulette wrong in 1, 2, 8 weeks of football. You miss a captain or two. You cop an injury mid-game that either rules a player out via the sub or severely impacts their output. And so for some reason or another, we can all have these optimistic hopes and then find ourselves 8 weeks in and genuinely probably feel like we're in one of two spaces. We feel like we've got some ground we need to make up, which the good news is that there's still time. Or we go, I feel like I'm in a really strong space to attack the middle third of the season, which is really where we're just coming into. So we'll get to that. How do you keep ahead of the pack in a moment? But Mini Monk, maybe from you, what's a piece or a couple of pieces of advice you can give coaches that are looking at their rank, looking at their team and going, this is not what I signed up for 8 weeks ago. How do they get their team back on track so that they can have a good, strong back two-thirds of 2024?
I think Rid said it actually really well in one of our group chats. It's never as bad as it seems, and it's never as good as it seems. You know, you might have had a bad week. I certainly did. I've certainly had a couple of bad weeks the last 2 weeks, but you just keep coming back for more, and you've just got to identify where the weakest links is. You go to, you know, what's the biggest issue with your team? Is it that you've got poor cash generation? Have you got poor players on field? Do you have poor rookies? Do you need a premium score who can actually pop consistent captaincy type scores, and you just go about addressing those issues. You go about thinking about how you can best utilize the two trades that you have. If it's hurting your mental health, take a day or two away, just give it a break, and then come back to it with a fresh mind. If you're playing for leagues, think about it for the long run rather than just the short run. But, you know, as he says, it's never as bad as it seems. There will be a way out, and there's always an option to be able to trade into trades that can make your team much better in the long run.
It's an interesting one, and Jordox, I am keen on your advice for coaches that feel like they're a little bit sluggish out of the gate. How much, from your perspective, Mini Monk, is this a perceptual issue? If you're a part of the active AFL fantasy community, and my premise is if you listen to the coaches panel, you're certainly on the more hardcore edge of AFL fantasy. You pride yourself in being a good coach. You watch the game. You understand big nuances of it. Well, casual people listen to it. We're certainly more, the content we create is much more skewed to the coach that wants to do well, wants to get hats, wants to win leagues, wants to dominate. Is it a perceptual thing as well? Is it you look at what people are boasting or flexing on in social media and they're like, I nailed this, I did that. Is that an element of it as well that plays into the mental mindset of how well or poorly we're doing?
Absolutely it is. But you got to remember that when people put things on social media, for the most part, if they're flexing about how good their rank is, it's because they're doing well, not because they're doing poorly. You know, you're going to get a skewed perception of what the community is actually going through when you go on to people that are actually trying to flex about how good their team value is, how good their rank is, how well they scored in a particular week. You don't get a true reflection of what the community is actually like. And it comes not now. We've still got time between now and when our ranks are actually starting to stabilize a bit. We're not even through the mid-season buys yet. We're not even at the mid-season buys yet. There's still plenty of time between now and then. But it's 100% perception. And, you know, sometimes it's just one bad week that just knocks you down and you come straight back up the next week. That's all it is.
Like I said, it could have been a 200-point differentiator just with one or two moves last week. Like if you put Graham on field over a closer year ahead, if you put the vice captaincy on Gorn over a Nick Martin, you're already 30, 40 points ahead. Like these are the just one or two movements and innocuous things mostly can create a 100-point swing. And then if you get an element of bad luck, well, now it's a 200-point roundabout that you've kind of got to overcome. What about for you, Jordox? I know you're having a pretty strong start to the year at the moment, but I know you've also had years, you've confided in the community before where you're like 8 weeks in, you're like, I'm done. The year's cooked. I'm now just playing for leagues and for fun and learning. What's your advice to coaches that do feel like the year's not done, but I'm not where I want to be?
I think the real takeaway from the round that's just happened is that there is comfort in numbers. And whilst, social media can be a little bit dangerous if you're not looking at it with the right lens, and what you boys said before about, you know, people are only going to be boasting when they're doing well. It doesn't mean everyone's doing well but you. I love that there's plenty of people on there complaining about the things that we're all going through. It's a nice little comfort. That's like, okay, I copped that bullet.
We're all up the creek together.
A lot of people. Exactly. But then, you know, the round finishes, and I guess my advice would be, and something I do is, you know, sometimes on a Monday, I opened up the team on Monday and I just went player by player of guys I want to get rid of. And it's amazing how that can change in a week. Like a week ago, I thought, I'm doing pretty well this year. You know, everyone's doing, and then bang, 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 there's like four or five guys that, you know, they've reached their peak price, their form is, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I guess the advice is just take a deep breath. It is okay. We're only, a third of the way through. A long way to go.
Just under, yeah.
And I'm looking forward to this round because, you know, last week was the first best 22 we'd had since Gather Round.
Gather Round.
So it was going to be a real equalizer. But the amount of stuff and shenanigans that happened, I mean, how many people were editing their trades, you know, Friday and then again Saturday? I know the two guys I traded out, I traded out on the Thursday because I had a Brisbane player coming in. By Saturday, both the guys I traded out were back in. And now I'm looking at them like, hey, I thought I got rid of you last week and you're still there. So, look, last week was really one out of the box in terms of chaos. We're still in best 22. And I think back in the work you've done this far, you know, preseason, the eight rounds we've had, just back yourself in. And don't forget the buyers are around the corner, the real buyers, the multi-buyers. And historically, they're when the whips really get cracking. So don't be too worried about your rank just yet. Be more concerned about how your side is shaping up.
And that's the key thing, isn't it? We know some teams at the moment, luck isn't the only definer to find where you are with rank. Even to have a good rank now, you've got to have a level of skill in it. But there are teams that are not really focusing on bench hygiene, which is about making sure you're spinning over that cash generation that's not popping on the field, which right now you're not seeing the benefit of that. But in 5 or 6 weeks' time, when your upgrade cadence is a week or two ahead of the pack, any 50-point, 100-point, 150-point separation you've got right now, you can amend. Buy structures, people have thought about the first 6 weeks of the year, but have given minimal to no thought about what the middle 4 weeks look like outside of, I probably should have a Port Adelaide or a Fremantle player in my midfield. That's politely the element of thought that a lot of coaches have put into the buys this year because we were so focused on navigating early days. So I think you boys are both right that there is a ton of things that if you are slow starting, rookie roulette's being unfair to you, one or two miscaptains, one or two injuries, or just a couple of starting squad guys didn't quite nail, man, you can still very, very easily make up 200 points a week at the moment. And that is thousands of ranking spots, depending on where you sit. So it's very, very easy if you do find yourself in a bad spot. But let's look at the reverse of that. Some coaches are in a really strong spot. They've nailed those early selection calls. Those 50-50 premium picks have worked. That rookie roulette, do I put Graham on field this week or Closey? No, they nailed that. Should I bench Gallagher? The answer's almost always been yes. But getting all those things right every single week or most weeks has put you in a position where now rankings-wise, you're comfortable. Team value-wise, you're sitting pretty. Injuries you've largely avoided and you haven't had anything that's forced your hand to change drastically too much, either your upgrade cadence or your ability to flip a few magnets that you want. So let's go the inverse for coaches then, Mini Monk. Those that are strong in position, both in rank, in team value, in trade planning, how do they stay ahead of the pack? Because there's nothing worse than starting strong and then just every week after like rounds 8, 9, and 10, you just watch yourself dropping away, you know, 300, 500,000 spot ranks every week. That's even more frustrating sometimes than just spluttering out of the gate and never really getting started. How do coaches stay ahead of the pack, man?
I think you got to look at your team and be genuine in your assessment of it. Where is your weaknesses in your team and how do you compare your team to the teams that are around you or at the higher ranks as well, you know? If you're a couple of 100,000 shorter on team value compared to them, that might be a premium in a couple of weeks' time compared to a mid-pricer that you have in your team. If you're equivalent, but there's one player that you've really gone as an antipod against for the majority of the season, do you want to match up on that? Or do you want to try and find the next player instead who can actually help you take more separation away from them? Is there a popular player that you want to jump off of this week instead of actually going for the typical one up, one down with your rookies that you're looking at? And can that be a way that you leverage your advantage as well? It's just about having that really honest conversation, I guess, with yourself about what is the best move to make for my team in order to improve it, not only for this week, but for the future. And what am I going to be doing that's different compared to the teams around me if I want to improve because I don't think my team is as good as them? Or if you think your team is good and you want to try and further it better, how can I make that separation away from them and continue to press the advantages that I already have?
Yeah, it's good. Anything you want to add into the mix of that, Jordox?
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't been too far ahead of the pack too many times, certainly not as much as many has. But I do think it's an interesting balance between, you know, if you've got a good lead or you've got a good spot about being defensive, versus continuing to do what put you in that spot in the first place. So
yeah,
I think that, honestly, you need a crystal ball. And when I say a crystal ball, obviously none of us have that, but we do all have those moments where we see something or we think something and not everyone's talking about it. And we know the game. We've been playing it for years. We've been watching footy for years. When you have a moment and you know it, you need to have courage to jump on it. And I'll give you an example. The last time I was on the pod a few weeks ago was when Sean Darcy was back. And I remember thinking,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had this crystal ball moment where I thought, I have to get rid of Luke Jackson this week, because once Darcy's in and he struggles, then everyone else will trade him out. That's how I can be ahead of the pack. I didn't do it. I had other things going on, and I didn't trust my instincts, and I didn't have the courage to follow what I thought I could see. And now he's staring at me right now on the screen saying, you should have got rid of me, mate.
Well, at least we know what one of your trades is probably likely to be this week.
No.
Again, if things...
It won't be, because there's five or six dudes who are still ahead of it.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, I think that's an interesting point to then jump to is there were some players in our teams that this time last week, much like you were alluding to there, Jordox, that we felt really, really comfortable about their long-term stability in our side, or at least the ability to hold for another 3 to 4 weeks as per the plan. And then there's a bunch of different players that for whatever reason have now got us a little bit uncertain. And I want to ask you this question. I'll work through some players in a moment, but the question is this: how do you know when you're jumping at shadows versus how do you know if you're acting and reacting faster than others? So players such as Tom Powell, I don't think anybody forecast him spending most of the game at half forward. Phillips gets subbed out and he does go back into the mids, but it does put a little bit of concern for coaches going, I've got a 95 forward, potentially a 90 forward. Now he's at a break-even point that I could start to lose some of the work he's done if this role holds. Dane Zorko moved to half back for a number of weeks, looked like in that role he was a dynamite scorer, made a ton of cash and banked a lot of points for us. And then for the first quarter last week, back at half forward, scored, I think, single digits in that quarter. But then from quarter time onward, moves back into that half back distribution role. Jack Steele has looked like, up until a fortnight ago, the number one midfielder in terms of ceiling, consistency, and fixture was nice. And it still is relatively friendly for the Saints in many regards. And yet, when it looked like he had mummified his leg in that matchup against Port Adelaide, that left knee, it's like, oh, he's not kicking, he's not spreading, he doesn't look like anything. Rowan Marshall owners that knee injury that, again, the club have still not really said too much about what's actually going on. That's hurt coaches. Those are just a tip of the iceberg. Can you tell I own a couple of these guys? It's just the tip of the iceberg on a couple of these guys. And so, Mini Mark, how do we know when we're jumping at shadows and we just need to keep the faith on these players a little bit? Or are we waiting too long, as Jordox mentioned, and can sometimes miss that opportunity to get ahead of the pack? Help coaches to know what's the difference.
It's very hard. And the real answer is, you know, in a week or 2 or 5 weeks time, depending on how it plays out, you don't know how it's going to play out. We don't know if Tom Powell is going to end up back in the midfield and get 80% CBAs from here and for the rest of the season. We don't know if Dane Zorko is going to go back to half back. We don't know if Marshall's going to be fine to play, but plays and only gets a 60 or gets a 70 or gets subbed out when they're up by 40 odd, or if Jack Steele doesn't make it up, or if Connor Rosie doesn't make it up to the shirt up. Like, there's a lot of things that we just don't know. And it comes down to a lot of your gut instinct with regards to players. You got to think about it. It's like, right, who went into the midfield mix for North Melbourne that meant that Tom Powell went out? It was Will Phillips, yes, but it was also Jai Simkin.
Correct.
Are they going to persist with Jai Simkin being in the Met? Or are they going to try and put the Bull, who's been doing very well in there for the other end of the season, and put him there? Are they going to persist with trying to put Dane Zorko at half forward and trying to see if he can work there because Connor McKenna was back in? Or are they going to shift him back to halfback permanently because they realized it didn't quite work against GWS? The other ones, you've just got to wait for injury confirmations from the club and trust them at their word. At the time of recording, Connor Rosie is available to play. Whether or not he plays, we don't know yet. And will play, apparently. True. But should he be playing? Who knows? We're not the medicos at the club. But if he's playing, you're probably going to hold him because you've got, you really don't want to be jumping off premiums at this time of year unless you absolutely have to. Marshall and Jack Steele are both suffering with knee complaints. Marshall's apparently in doubt to play. Jack Steele had to train away from the group today. It's concerning because it's an issue that Steele has had as recently as last year and hampered his scoring a lot. But I think you just have to back in the fixtures there. So there's arguments for and against all of these players, plus potentially a half a dozen more. Someone like, you know, Jack Lukosius is another one that comes to mind of players, the people that jumped onto him. You've got another player like Jeremy Sharp had a very down game on the weekend where it all just didn't get to his win because of the way the Dockers played. You've got concerns about Elliot Yeo getting a rest after Harley Reid has had one as well. Like, we can't just jump at shadows. We have to jump as when there's actual news or enough to go on. Like, until we see the team sheets, if we see on the team sheets that, you know, Will Phillips, Jai Simkin are all in the team, that's when you're probably alarm bells ringing with regards to Tom Powell. But if you see that Jai Simkin's named at half port, Clarker comes out and says, we're going to try and put Tom Powell back in there. Will Phillips is out of the team. That's when you go, all right, well, let's just hold him from this point on.
Feel safe.
But yeah, you've got to wait for as much information as you can. And then eventually you've just got to back your gut in with regards to these calls.
Yeah. Jordox, you've been doing some work on X/Twitter, depending on, you know, what version of social media titles you want to give stuff. And you've been doing it now for a couple of years for AFL Fantasy and for Dream Team coaches. You've been keeping us updated around the ton runs. And specifically, one of the players that's on the ton run at the moment is Zach Merritt. Every single year in the preseason, the narrative from the community is, don't pay up big dollars for these guys. They're never going to be as big or as good or as dominant as anybody. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then inevitably, most players do drip some value, but there seems to be at least one every year. 12 months ago, it was Clayton Oliver before his injury that was arguably not peaked price and outperformed their average and was dominant. You could probably put Zach Merritt into that mix. He's one of, what, a couple that have turned up every week? What is it? Sheasel,
three left. Yeah.
Sheasel, Gorn, Merritt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the three. Yeah. So, it's been tricky to do the 100 club because of opening round and all the buys. But as it stands, the three players who have tunned in all available games, not including opening round because that wasn't a fantasy season, sure. Yeah, Merritt, Gorn, and Sheasel. Amazing.
So talk to me about Zach Merritt, because I want to ask Mini Monk about another player in a moment that I think is really crucial. But arguably, within $100,000 you've got, of cheaper, you've got Tom Green. We'll talk about him soon. About 80,000 away, you've got Tom Green. Sorry, it's about 100,000 at Bontempelli. Similar sort of savings towards a Jordan Dawson, who was a great buy for people that did it. Zach Butters, from a buy structural perspective, is again about 100,000 there, but his break even's up at around that 120 marker. He hasn't, so certainly his break even's past what his average is at the moment. But I guess my question for you is this: with the consistency of tons that we know he can do, not just this year, but really since like 2018, he's been unbelievable for us, probably earlier than that, to be fair. 2014, probably, if I'm honest. Is it worth paying the $1 million marker to go and get him just for that sleep at night factor? Or is it better to save the 50, 100K and hope that your Greens, Bonts, Dawsons, whoever's can get within earshot of him? What's your take on spending over $1 million for a guy like him?
I think there's a place for it, a time and a place for it, and you can do it. I think with Merritt, I mean, it's incredible what he's done. But again, if you compare him to, say Tom Green, a few of those other guys who are right at the top there, you've sort of got to just forget the last 8 weeks, because all these guys at the top end can all do what Merritt's just done. They can.
Yeah.
And then on the flip of that, there's every chance. In fact, you know, some people like to play the game by the percentages, by the averages, and playing the percentages, which suggests that Merritt is due for a 90 because he's just gone ton. Then some of the other guys, like Tom Green, he's had a couple of his 80 or 90 games. So there's, when you're splitting these guys, and you know, Merritt, it's highly unlikely he's going to score 100 every week till the end.
Sure.
But Tom Green might, because he's already had a couple. That's the way I think about it from a numbers point of view. And then the great divide at this point, and I think it's very appropriate at this point of the year. I don't do it too early, but the buys are the great equalizer and or great divider rather. So last week I had a chance to bring in Merritt, and I was willing. I was going to pay the mill or whatever he was last week. And then just right at the end, I pivoted to Dunkley because of my buys. I went ahead and looked and thought Dunkley is going to suit me better, knowing that the matchup was much better for Merritt last week. But that's the decision I made. And then Dunkley, when he scored, he hit a
flat ton, I think.
I mean, he could. Yeah. That was okay. I was hoping for more. 69 at the half, but anyway, not counting. But Merritt, yeah, it's risky paying a mil for a guy who's statistically due for a drop. And then you look at, okay, is it just fantasy numbers or is Merritt actually maybe leading the Brownlow, leading the Essendon Best and Fairest? I haven't watched every Essendon game, but from the commentary, I'm hearing that he's added to his game. He's doing more than just, you know, flying around picking up touches. He's a lot more, what would you say?
Dangerous.
More dangerous. Impactful, yeah. So
good looking. Trying to make you say something. No.
Yeah, no, he's a good looking rooster. But he is, you threw me off now. He is flying. I think he's worth a mil. But just know that a 90 is around the corner, and it's just it's just how it works. The longer they ton, the longer the more likely that they'll miss one.
Regression to the mean gets to us eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, West Coast this week, so I understand why people are looking at it hard, but then it does start to in an interesting patch of games. It feels a bit yo-yo-ish. It's GWS. It's North Melbourne.
Yo plays the West Coast.
Okay. Yo-yo-ish, not yo-yo. It's GWS, North Melbourne, Richmond, Gold Coast, Carlton before they're round 14 by. So there are some weeks you'd feel pretty confident that 120 average, he can hit, it is comfortable. And then there's some other weeks like that Giants matchup does feel a little bit harder. That Carlton matchup on paper we do know is a little bit harder. Crazy enough, though, they play West Coast in round 8 and round 15. So happy days if you're an Essendon player. You're going to get some good victories.
Yes, but West Coast aren't as maybe easy. They're not as easy as they used to be for the inside midfielders. Yeah,
no, they're not.
So I tend to look at DFS's matchup charts because I think they're very good. They update them every week. They're very clear about where the data is pulled from and the players that represent that.
And they tell you the 10-game and 5-game split too.
Exactly. And you look at last week, it was Gold Coast against them. Rauer's top scores with 122. Anderson 111, Took Miller 109. It's very rare to see a team have three midfielders go over 100 and not one of them go absolutely berserk with a 140, 150.
Yeah,
and it's true. And big tackle numbers too. Not lots of marks for those around, boys. And
yeah, 13 Merritt, or something.
Yeah,
Merritt's a big tackler, but he does get a lot of marks as well.
Yeah. And the other thing about Merritt is he's the third most expensive player in the game, along with the other two compatriots who haven't dropped below a ton in the season. Mm-hmm. But he's priced at 117. If you see him going at 117 from now until the end of the season, would you still buy him? Maybe it's worth it, but. Mm-hmm. If you can get someone else who's priced at, say, 95 or 100, who can go 110 between now and the end of the season,
better
I'd much rather look for that. And I think that there are a lot of players that do fit that bill this week that you'd be better off going towards, despite what appears to be a good fixture for me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Perhaps a good cautionary tale for anyone who is considering merit. I've got a mate, and this is in leagues, not overall, but in consecutive weeks, he picked up Jack Steele, who missed the ton for the first time, and then he finally got on Heaney this week gone, who missed the ton for the first time.
All right, well, can you just tell us who is? Yeah, let us know. Anyone?
Yeah.
Could you get him to trade into any Port Adelaide player as a Crows fan? Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. No.
Get him to Clayton Oliver. So, no, that's fine. Speaking of Port Adelaide, a player that, you know, injuries create opportunities. Jordan Sweet has moved into that number one ruck role last week. And he's got at least another 4 to 5 weeks based on Port Adelaide's listing of the injury list. Soldo's still 4 to 5 weeks away. I'll get your thoughts on this in a mini, Monk, but there is a little kind of caveat I want to put on this. Sweet was excellent on Friday night. He was excellent. However, he was rucking against Caminiti, Owens, and a Rowan Marshall that couldn't run, couldn't jump, couldn't use any of his one-wood skill set around the ground and at stoppages to be able to be at his best. That said, Sweet did what he needed to do for us, which was score well, get his break even to a great spot, and now we find ourselves with an interesting junction selection. So I want to ask you a blanket statement, Mini Monk, and then let's work our way through all the nuances, because it's never as simple and it's never as complex as we make it out to be. Here's the question. Is Jordan Sweet the best money maker available to us to trade into this week?
Potentially, yes. Okay. I know that I'm fence sitting. I've been...
You've spent too much time with me. You know the fence now.
I know the fence sit, but I'm not saying that he won't be a good money maker, but it's a question of what's your time frame.
Okay.
If you're talking 4 to 5 weeks, absolutely he could make a lot of cash. He could make 200K in 5 weeks without breaking a sweat, with feedable type scores for most of those weeks as well.
Yeah.
But we have a deadline on when his role runs out. We have a deadline that we know that Port Adelaide favour playing Soldo in the ruck compared to him. And if he's playing shared ruck duties, not only does he have a deadline, he also has a deadline as to when his price is going to start coming down and that you have to jump off of him. Now, the good news is that's probably going to lie around about when the buys are and you can jump off with 3 trades a week. That's great. But he might not be the highest cash generator from now until, say, the end of the buy rounds. There might be a rookie who's priced at 250, 300K, who it's much easier for them to make 300K than it is for someone who's already priced at nearly 450K.
Yeah, it is. So I'll throw a couple to you, Jonox, as well as to you, Mini Monk. There are a few hundred coaches, I don't know exactly, but there are a few hundred coaches, maybe more, that have got what we have dubbed the three-headed ruck monster, Jordox. That is Gorn, Grundy, and Cherry. Is trading one of Cherry or Grundy just the absolute no-brainer gift of the season for them at this point in time? Just, you're not thinking of trading Gorn. Sweet's going to make you 400-odd K, depending on the player. Is that just for you, make that move, flick that on, and off you go? Or for you, is it still a bit more nuanced that potentially there are other premiums and, as Mini Monks mentioned, other value options that could make you more money? Or is it just don't even consider, move one of them on, get Sweet, next trade, please?
Well, I'll answer it in part answering the first question, and I haven't assessed the cash cows coming through and whatnot, but this smells to me like Riley O'Brien 2019. And for those playing the game back then, we'll remember Sam Jacobs got injured for the Crows.
Yep.
Rob came in and he was, I don't know for sure, but he would have been one of the biggest money makers. I think we're about to see the same thing happen with Sweet. You know, he's not a kid He's been playing VFL for a long time. He's ready. And I'm not even convinced Soldo kicks him out of that spot. I think he's got 5 weeks to show him what he's got on the big stage in the AFL. I think he can perform to a high enough level that Soldo isn't just a straight walk back in. So based on that,
at least a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. So for the three-headed ruck people,
monster,
which, you know, credit to them. I didn't think you could do it and still be competitive. I just thought it was too much money on the bench, but fair play to them. Now they're in an interesting spot because, yes, trading down to Jordan gets you about 400K, give or take, depending on if it's Grundy or Cherry. I don't know. I kind of worry about that position, and I almost would prefer to be in the position of R2 down to Sweet. And here's why. You've gone 8 rounds with 600, 700K on your bench. There was always going to be a point where that turned into the more normal setup of, you know, a 200K, 300K
money on field.
Guy on the bench.
Got
it. Yeah, exactly. By going your R3, and let's just say for argument's sake, it's Grundy, because it could be Cherry. That's a whole nother combo. Let's say it's Grundy down to Sweet at R3. He will make you a bucket load of cash. But I just wonder if you're going to go another 5-6 weeks with that amount of cash on your bench. I don't know if it's as simple as the no-brainer you said. But if we talk about Sweet removed from the scenario, I think he's Riley O'Brien of 2019. And I think he's going to make a lot of money. And I'm not going to be that surprised if Soldo has to work his way back through the sandfall.
That's fair.
So here's the fun one for you if you're in that position. Why don't you just trade both? Why don't you just consider that? Like, honestly, you're killing two birds with one stone. You're getting rid of both the drugs that have generated you a lot of cash. You're getting onto another one who generates you a lot of cash.
Yeah.
And you can almost basically grab a straight up premium, and you're probably financing the potential to grab two premiums next week as well.
Correct.
It's a very interesting option.
So how would you do it? Talk me through it. So your R2 would go to Sweet, and then your R3 would be swapped to a
primo.
I think
a lot of them are running an R3 or an R4 even. Say it's like a Livingston or a Barnett or Livingston someone that they've been using as a ruck for a loophole.
Yeah.
And you chuck them from your utility, you've been using it to loop at F6, you chuck them to your utility or to your R3 position, and bang.
Correct.
There you go. You're in a great spot.
That's the play.
But I think what you actually do is you give it this week. You don't have to rush into that move this week. But what you can do this week is you can put Jordan Sweet at your R3 this week. And you see him because this is his toughest ruck matchup for the next 8 weeks. Let's say he lasts on the team for 8 weeks' time. Adelaide is the hardest ruck matchup that he has until now, until the end of the mid-season buys, which is probably your jump-off point.
Yes.
It's quite fitting that he's playing against Rob.
Yeah.
Ironic, isn't it? But if he scores a 75 or an 80 this week, you're probably thinking that's probably in that in between. But if he goes 90 this week, you just commit. You move your R3, you move your loopholing ruckman to your R2 spot, and you trade off for both Grundy and Cherry. You've capped in probably at both near their max price. You've got Sweet in, great. You've got the next cash generator. You've got the premium that you want in, great. And you've got the ability to be able to grab a couple of premiums next week as well. There you go. You're ahead of the pack again. That's the interesting play.
So for those that aren't in that situation, which again, really helpful for those that are in that three-headed approach, for those that probably have one of, or maybe they have both, Marshall and Cherry. We did you notice both of us, if you're watching on YouTube, both me and Minnie Monk, we're like, yeah, that's us. Teams might inform a lot. And again, that edit feature that Jordox mentioned, you know, at the start of the episode, you might be trading out, you know, Cherry, and all of a sudden you're like, nope, stuff it, it's going to be Marshall, and away you go. But for coaches that, if you don't have anything other than Gorn and English at R1 and R2, you're looking at Sweet. I think that's the honest statement. Unless you've got those two locked away at R1, R2, you're looking at it. So again, I know fence sitting is a popular sentiment, and I'm sorry that I've started it, but for those that have Marshall and Cherry, because it's different for those that are Gorn and Cherry. Is Sweet a viable play as a downgrade option for one of them? Not just for the points potentially on field, as you mentioned, it is a tough matchup this week on paper, but because it does, it brings you 300K off Cherry alone, let alone what you get off Marshall. It should finance you pretty much any upgrade you want off one of your $500,000 cash cows that you are looking to upgrade off. So which of the two is the determiner for you? Regardless, let's assume Campbell isn't named and Marshall plays. Because if it's Marshall misses, it's different. If Campbell's named, it's different.
I think
if they're both number one rucks,
is a real shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Hayes as well.
Yeah, Jack
Hayes. Hayes isn't as impactful on his scoring based on historical data, so I wouldn't be as concerned there. But it's potential.
I could help him, really.
Yeah. Well, I think what we want to do, and this is what I try and talk about a lot in the game, is that information is king. Information matters the most about it. And let's say that most teams, if you're not in the three ruck setup, if you've got two rucks, most likely you're running a loopholing ruck at R3 currently. Why don't you, before Thursday night, trade one of your rookies that you're thinking of getting rid of, be it a Dempsey, be it a Williams, be it a Sharp, be it a Gallagher, to Jordan Sweet. And you just stick him at R3, you put the emergency on him, and you see what Friday brings you, or Thursday night brings you. And then you can look at it again on Friday. Once we've got more information from St. Kilda about what's going on, from, you know, all the other things that might be happening in your team players-wise, and then you can make a decision. Because if Jordan Sweet goes 50-odd, and Rowan Marshall is probably named, and Rowan Marshall's named to play, but Jack Hayes is there, you're probably still playing Rowan Marshall.
Yeah.
You're probably not saying, I want to trade him. But if Sweet goes 80, and Jack Hayes is named, or Marshall's managed, that's when you pivot. That's why we have this edit trade feature. That's why it makes it so valuable for you. The information that you can garner from having a player play in seeing a score before you decide to execute your other trades for the week matters a lot.
Great.
And so, I mean, I'm saying it because that's likely what I'm going to be doing this week. I'm going to stick Jordan Sweet at R3 with the emergency on him. I'm going to see what Thursday night brings me. And then I'm going to decide what my other trades are going to be on Friday.
Yep.
I think that that's the best way to approach it.
Let's assume Sweet goes 85. So a good score, but not an easy call. An 85 solid. Sure. Marshall doesn't play. Are you happy to bench Marshall for the week? Or is it like, you know what? Again, I know it's team dependent and what the rest of your team looks like and all those things. I get that. But as a generalization, if you are in that position, are you looking at going, stuff at Marshall's out, I'm getting off him because he's carrying an injury anyway? Or are you going, oh, this could be a separation moment where I can still get my upgrade cadence going in a concurrent fashion and be only maybe 10 to 15 points off what I was expecting Marshall to give me anyway?
If Sweet goes 85 and Marshall isn't named, I am bailing out of Marshall as fast as I can. Because if he's gone 85 against Riley O'Brien, that means he's probably played a pretty good game in a showdown, which is probably going to learn him a lot of curry inside of the Port Adelaide team. And Marshall not playing it doesn't matter. Like, if he's playing or if he's not playing at that point, you probably want to have Sweet as your R2.
Yep.
And so if you can say, I'm getting rid of Marshall, I can get to whichever player I want, be it any premium you want, basically, except for maybe to Sheasel or to Gorn or to... But you're not trading into a Ruckman anyway. So let's say it's to Sheasel or to Zach Merritt. You can basically get to any other player you want.
Yeah,
you just sideways, because if you've got a rookie, not quite a rookie, but a low price, mid-price player who's able to go at 85 in a tough matchup and has the potential to go at 90-95 for an 8-week block potentially.
Yeah.
That's gravy. That's just gravy.
You got to take that, don't you?
And then just real quick before we move on from the sweet discussion, what about us Grundy owners? Because I've got him at R2, and that's the play I'm looking at. But it's hard because there's so many other.
Same thing applies. I would just trade into Sweet, see what Thursday night brings, and then go from there. Have a few ideas in your mind. Have a few plans of what you're going to be doing. Don't go into it completely blind, but know what your plans are and what your line is going to be. and what information you need to see.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe put your other ruckman at utility so you don't want to bash the phone app with how you loop things in and out a little bit. So maybe that could help you too. So.
You need to do a recording at the start. Once we're done here, and chuck it at the front of the podcast and say trigger warning Mini Monk too many times, because that's the third time you've hit me already this night.
Information. Way too much. Maybe I'm at that point in my fantasy season where I find my greatest joy at poking the bear of Mini Monk. Maybe that sounds like, all right, rapid fire. I want to give you about 7 player names. We'll take it in turns for you, lads. And give me your take on whether or not they are viable plays. Don't tell me team dependent. Tell me rapid fire. I'll ask a more potently direct question to force a better out. So my question for you, Jordox, is this. Can Bailey Dale be a top 6 defender from here on in, given he's gone absolutely bonkers for us over the past 2 weeks? Can he and will he go 95-plus from here on for the rest of the season?
Can and will. He's the guy I'm looking at this week, although this sweet talk has got me thinking about sweet. But Bailey Dale, I know it's rapid fire, but I just got a few points on him. First of all, in drafts, I think he's going to be the draft pick of drafts, because if you can remember back to preseason, there was talk of him playing forward. So he would have gone down all those draft orders, and now look at him. So the reason I'm so confident is I've seen these two big scores, and I thought to myself, don't react to the scores like we sometimes tend to do. And I went back and looked. He's been solid. Apart from, I think, one game and the game that he was the sub, which put the rocket up him and is working. He had plenty of tons earlier in the year. So for me, at his price, I think he's the number one trade target this week, maybe with Sweet. But the Sweet one's too complicated. Dale's more simple. No.
All right. I like that. I love someone that's prepared to make a big call. So nice one from you. Mini Monk, is it time to go for Jeremy Sharp? He's done his job. Or is there one or two more weeks of money we can make out of Jeremy? Is it time to go or not just quite?
I think they're two very separate questions. I don't think that there's much more cash to generate out of him, but I also don't think he's an urgent priority to get rid of.
Yep, I think it's a fair shout. There's been two things to celebrate for Jordox this week. One, the Crows won a game. The second is they actually debuted someone. I think they might be the last AFL club this year to have a debutant. I might be wrong on that. So,
no, you're 100% right.
You know you're having a good year when you get to round 8 and you're like, you know what we should do? Give a kid a crack here.
That'll help you.
I'm triggering everyone on this episode. So my question is, he's playing in the showdown. We will know if he's the sub. If he's the sub, this question is null and dull and irrelevant. But if Dan Curtin dodges the vest to start the game, is he an option we can jump on this week as a downgrade option?
I don't believe so. But let me quickly say, I'm in the minority of Crows fans. I'm actually glad they've waited till round 9 or 8 or 9 to debut him. Yeah. Anyway, that's not really the point of the podcast. You couldn't. I don't think it's not really the way to do it. No.
No, I agree.
But it's bloody exciting that he's playing.
Okay, there we go. Mini Monk, Jai Caldwell versus McRae was a dilemma for a lot of coaches last week. Still got, I think it was 20-odd possessions on Anzac Day. Some in the community say he still had the role, so I'm going to back in my eyes. And others say, I'm a little bit nervous that I went to Caldwell and not McRae or Dylan Moore. So my question is, Jai Caldwell, is the role volatility that we alluded to earlier, is that real with Caldwell, or did he actually indeed have the role? What was your take on Caldwell and him moving forward from now?
He didn't have the exact same role. He had a similar role, but he had a significant decrease in his CBAs. But he still was able to find his way around stoppages and get a lot of the ball. And he had a few things go against him, you know, a few tackles that he could have got that got given his frees against, especially a couple late, which really did hurt him. And it was the difference between probably a mid-80s score and the 71 that he did get, which, you know, if he got an 85, I don't think we'd be complaining about his score, about what he was doing.
No.
He lost the role. Well, he lost the CBAs, I should say, to Jake Stringer on the weekend. And Jake Stringer hadn't had more than 25% CBAs in a game until the weekend when he went 75%. He was the second highest CBA midfielder behind Zach Merritt, who is almost always going to be the highest CBA midfielder for Essendon. And he did a role, Stringer did a role standing next to their most damaging players. Typically, it was Dugowie, giving him a lot of attention, making sure that he couldn't get easy ball. But they needed an inside mid who had the big body to be able to stand alongside of them and be able to provide that defensive pressure that Caldwell probably wasn't big enough to be able to do. If we look at their fixtures over the next 3 weeks, they have West Coast, probably not someone to stand next to unless they really want to put him next to, I don't know, a Tim Kelly, but not really the same type of player.
Yeah.
Maybe a Reed, but I doubt it as well. Like, you're not going to do that. GWS. They don't really have a big body aside from Tom Green, but Tom Green's a very different beast the way he plays the ball to Jordan Dugowie. And North Melbourne, I wouldn't be jumping at any shadows with regards to Jordan Caldwell. I think you just sit, you just wait. Maybe McRae gets 15 points in you this week or last week, maybe get 15 back this week.
Yeah, it's a good shout. There are, Jordox, three players under 300,000 that I think coaches are considering as downgrade options. One is Darcy Jones. The other is Taj Woden. And then the third that probably feels the safest in terms of job security, and that's purely based on the team he plays for, in Riley Hardiman. My question is this. Of the three sub-300K downgrade options that are available to coaches this week, who do you think is the better job security? And who do you think is the better scorer? And are the two one in the same? That's a complex way to say who under 300K should be downgrading to.
Hardiman's a good one. He had a nice role. I watched him close on the weekend. I think they were going to give him a run. You know, they put him there and they put Fisher as the sub. So I think that tells you. I mean, I do have my concerns with North and you know, Tom Powell is probably the main reason for that they are starting to flick the magnets around to try and get a result. But I think they brought this kid in for a reason and I think he'll get a run at it. I do like Woden. I don't think he's a terrible option. I think he's one of those classic guys, even like a Kai Lohman who sort of had 3 or 4 weeks as a sub. We forgot about them, and then all of a sudden they get a full game and they can start making some cash. The guy I loved watching the most was the Giants boy, but I don't see his scoring being there. I think he's given himself a few weeks in the team from that performance, even with Green back. But yeah, I'm not seeing him scoring like the others.
Yeah. It'll be the most unlucky omission I've ever seen from a debutant. But it wouldn't be unwarranted either, given the players they've got coming back into that side.
Top
that
side, Giants, top of the ladder. Is it does
deep
happen
in the forwards.
There's a very real chance that he's actually the sub this week.
I agree. Jones is the one of the three I'd be the least comfortable in picking. And Woden, I think, has got a limited time frame on him. They've got a couple of players coming back into their side in the next 2 weeks. If I was going anywhere under 300K, it's Hardiman and just backing in that he's going to get a good 4 week stretch at it. The round 12 bye is not ideal, but he's got to give him some games.
That's a month away. I think worry about that then.
The other thing with Hardiman is because of the game that he had on the weekend, it wasn't an easy match to play. Being down in Tasmania against Adelaide, they're not
just
very
ask Tom
friendly. Yeah. But this week they have St Kilda.
Much favorable.
Yeah, and where are they playing the game? I can't remember, but I think that it's going to be a fairly friendly matchup. I'm not sure if it's under the roof or not.
It would be, you'd think.
Oh, God, let me check. Yeah, it's under the roof.
It's at Marvel.
They're playing St Kilda under the roof. they're trying to survive as a team, not even try and win, but probably just show something. What happened last year when they got to this point? Remember Jack Zeeble getting a 100-point half AFL Fantasy?
Take me back.
Good memory.
And have a think about who we might want to be VCing this week if that's the case as well.
Oh, Harry.
If he goes forward, boys. Don't you start.
All right. Last two players. This was meant to be a rapid fire to wrap the episode up fast. No, it's my bad. I've derailed this whole episode, to be fair. Last question for you, Jordox. Marcus Bontempelli was started by a big chunk of the community because he was deemed the most bulletproof premium midfielder. And while he's not given us a bad week yet, he's only really given us one week that would make us feel justified in that starting selection. Down to about 920K, does have Hawthorn this week, so, you know, much more favourable fixture than maybe some others in and around that price tag. Can Bont still go 110 from here on in, or do you like others at different, you know, at comparable prices over Bont?
I think he can. Well, we saw it last year. He took about 4 weeks to get going in that run that he had last year, and that took him to career highest numbers. I think he can again this year. I don't think he will. I just think there's a lot going on at the Bulldogs. So, you know, we won't go into it, but, you know, they're doing a lot of weird things. And Bont, when I compare him to some of the other mids in that price bracket who are gettable, I don't see any of them being the sort of player that could go forward or, you know, do something different like that's happening at the Dogs. So, yeah, if you've got Bont, I don't think you get rid of him. I think there's other guys. That's a tasty price, though. Whew.
When you see Bont.
Maybe in the run home after the buys, you know, he can give you a six-week stretch or something. But at the moment, he's just too all over the place.
We're used to seeing Bontempelli as the highest CBA mid for Western Bulldogs. Maybe him and Liberatore as being probably the top two. In the last 2 weeks, he's been in the high 70s. He's been second 2 weeks ago to Adam Treloar. And last week he was third behind both Treloar and Ed Richards, of all people. That is a definite flag for me.
They've given Richards a run in there, which, I'm not sure that'll last, but. Yeah,
no, it won't.
Cause for concern nonetheless.
Yeah, how good's Treloar, by the way? He's
been very good.
Casually going under the radar. Sorry.
No, he's been a premium when he's on the park.
That's it. That smells like a draft owner to me over there, just quietly bringing that one out. So then on the flip side, we've already alluded to him, Minimunk, you get to wrap us up with this one. Tom Green started the year on fire, had the bye. Had a good score, then a couple of down weeks, and certainly returned back to what we know he can be, about 20K more than what Bont is off the top of my head. So if you're looking for a premium mid, is Tom Green, and under 950K will be my cutoff line. If you're upgrading to a premium mid via Grundy, Cherry, Marshall, or you've just magically found a way to generate cash elsewhere, is Tom Green the best premium mid to get under 950K? And if he's not, who is?
He might be the best under 950K. It's very hard to say. There's a lot of factors that point towards him being potentially the top scoring mid for the year. We've obviously seen that Zach Merritt has taken that mantle at the moment. Jack Steele was doing very well up until the last couple of weeks. But aside from those 2 weeks... Aside from those 2 weeks, we had a bit of a down couple of games against the Suns and St Kilda, be it at Adelaide Hills and then at Monaco Oval, which a bit weird. That St Kilda game was a very weird one for him. He didn't quite look himself today. He's been above the ton and some very big tons as well. And if we look at the fixtures for the next 4 weeks before his bye, he's got the Swans, Essendon, the Western Bulldogs in Geelong. So it's pretty good. People might look towards that round 12 buy and go, oh, you can't bring him in now. That buy is coming up too soon. My challenge to anyone who says that is that everyone's going to have a buy. And who else do you have in your team that has the round 12 buy in your midfield? Like, seriously, have a look. If you look at the four teams that are on the bye that week, we have the Swans, North Melbourne, GWS, and
Brisbane.
Like Brinkins, Brisbane. Yeah. Brisbane midfielders, maybe Dunkley. Josh Dunkley. Probably not touching Lachie Neale with a 6-foot pole. Nope. Swans midfielders.
So,
Golden, I'm not sure I'd go to Golden at the moment, but I'm not sure I'd go there over Tom Green.
Yep.
And North Melbourne, like, you're not touching LDU at this point in time until he turns it around. So realistically, the only midfielder that you might want to own off of those 14th on the round 12 bye is Tom Green.
Josh Kelly. Oh, sorry. Sorry. I thought we were building towards it. Sorry.
Well, I mean, he is quietly going under the radar with quite a good season as well. And there is a little bit of a correlation between his scoring and Stephen Canelio being out of the team, though, but
let's not focus on that.
Go too down that far. But if we're looking at it, Tom Green at his price point, there's a very real chance that buy is already at $1 million. You're looking for an upgrade target off at the buy. You're not paying $1 million for a player. You're looking for the value player at that point in time. If you can get him now, sort that buy issue out. You get probably a top eight midfielder. You're home and honest.
If you were to say to me, MJ, give me five or six players that can go 130 over the next month, that you go opposition regardless, who's going 130, I'd put Tom Green in that consideration. And so, to me, if I've got 950K to spend in the mids, I'm going Green feels like the most robust option for me in there. To be able to take a punt on. So that's for me.
I like Goulden. I think I think it's very close between those two for mine for that price.
Yep. I would not knock anybody that says I like Errol this year. He just finds a way to get into space.
He's just building. He's just building. He's
fun to own. We all remember that from last year. That's for sure. Hey, boys, you've been absolute superstars on this episode. Jordux, always a pleasure, mate. I'm looking forward to hearing about how your team goes this week as well. Thanks for being back on the Coaches Panel podcast, mate.
No worries. Great to be on, boys. Good luck this week.
Thank you. And Mini Mark, you as well. The only way is up.
Only way is up until it goes back down again.
With the great man say, it's never as bad as it seems.
Nah, it's fine. You can't always have it go your way, and it'll be a long season, but it'll still be a fun one.
Absolutely, it will be. Hey, thank you so much. You've been watching this on YouTube. Thank you so much. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, the good news is super easy. It's a click of a button to be able to go and do that. And if you've got your trades locked in AFL Fantasy this week or you're not sure about them, comment them below and let us know. We'll reach back out. We'll get in touch with you. Love to see what some of the trade plans you've got cooking at the moment. If you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your audio podcast from, make sure you follow us there and give a five-star rating and review. It's just one of those simple things you could do that helps us in an incredible measure and way. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener and you haven't left a comment yet, we'd love for you to do that. We'll even read out your comment if it's nice in one of the upcoming podcasts. So if you want a bit of a shout out, you can get involved and just leave a comment with a five-star rating and Apple Podcasts will give you a shout out one of the podcasts. And then lastly, our Patreons. Man, they are getting some amazing content at the moment. Access to hidden groups. If you're at that premium top tier, you're getting the Round Review podcast. Our paid Spotify subscribers also gain access to that. And then all tiers of our Patreons, all tiers get this, a new initiative from us in 2024, a weekly question and answer podcast that lands every single Friday morning. So depending on the level of support you've got as a Coaches Panel Patreon, you're getting four podcasts from us a week. Absolutely drowning in my voice, so I apologize for that. If you do want to get any of those accesses to become a Patreon to support us and get some of these bonus content elements, all the details for that, or you can follow us on social media, and every other link you need for the Coaches Panel can be found in the description of this episode. Hey, good luck heading into round 8. We hope it is kind to you. We hope your trades are favorable. We hope Rookie Roulette lands your way and that you nail an early week vice captain so you don't have to panic about who to put the C on a Sunday afternoon. Good luck, and we'll chat to you very, very soon.